Hello, everyone. We're going to have a bit of a different Just Jocin today. When you're seeing this, it'll be exactly a week after the news broke with Charisma Carpenter, and both Jasmine and myself thought it would be tone deaf and unjust and not in the spirit of Buffy, for sure, to not say anything about... I don't like using the term allegations because I do completely believe them, but Charisma Carpenter's experiences and
her statement that she released today. Yeah. So today we're not Just Jocin, we are serious discussion. So I'm Jasmine Heron, and of course Sabrina Hannon was the one just talking to you. For people who have been living under a rock for the last week. Some people have shut down from social media because the world's on fire. So just to catch you up, Charisma Carpenter released a statement via, I believe, Twitter, discussing abuses, emotional abuses and professional abuses that she received via Joss Whedon during her time working professionally on Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. I don't know if we want to read the statement or if we want to...
I mean, yeah, I think it's worth reading it for sure.
Would you like to or shall I?
I know I at least have the first part, but if I don't have the second part, you can pop in there. I'll popcorn it over to you. All right. For nearly two decades, I, as in Charisma Carpenter, have held my tongue and even made excuses for certain events that traumatized me to this day. Joss Whedon abused his power on numerous occasions while working together on the sets of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. While he found his misconduct amusing, it only served to intensify my performance anxiety, disempower me, and alienate me from my peers. The disturbing incidences triggered a chronic physical condition from which I still suffer. It is with a beating heavy heart that I say I coped in isolation and, at times, destructively. Last summer, when Ray Fisher publicly accused Joss of abuse and unprofessional behavior towards the cast and crew during reshoots on the Justice League set in 2017, it gutted me. Joss had a history of being casually cruel. He has created hostile and toxic work environments since his early career. I know because I experienced it firsthand, repeatedly. Like his ongoing passive-aggressive threats to fire me, which wreaks havoc on a young actor's self-esteem, and callously calling me fat to colleagues when I was 4 months pregnant, weighing 126 pounds. He was mean and biting, disparaging about others openly, and often played favorites, pitting people against one another to compete and vie for his attention and approval. He called me in for a sit-down meeting to interrogate me and berate me regarding a rosary tattoo I got to help me feel more spiritually grounded in an increasingly volatile work climate that affected me physically. Joss intentionally refused multiple calls from my agents, making it impossible to connect with him to tell him the news that I was pregnant. Finally, once Joss was apprised of the situation, he requested a meeting with me. In that closed door meeting, he asked me if I was going to keep it and manipulatively weaponized my womanhood and faith against me. He proceeded to attack my character, mock my religious beliefs, accuse me of sabotaging the show, and then unceremoniously fired me the following season once I gave birth. At 6 months pregnant, I was asked to report to work at 1 a.m. after my doctor recommended shortening my work hours. Due to long and physically demanding days and the emotional stress of having to defend my needs as a working pregnant woman, I began to experience Braxton Hicks contractions. It was clear to me the 1 a.m. call was retaliatory. That's where mine leaves off.
Back then, I felt powerless and alone. With no other option, I swallowed the mistreatment and carried on. After all, I had a baby on the way, and I was the primary breadwinner of my growing family. Unfortunately, all this was happening during one of the most wonderful times in new motherhood. All that promise and joy sucked right out, and Joss was the vampire. Despite the harassment, a part of me still sought his validation. I made excuses for his behavior and repressed my own pain. I'd even stated publicly at conventions that I'd work with him again. Only recently, after years of therapy and a wake-up call from the Time's Up movement, do I understand the complexities of this demoralized thinking. It is impossible to understand the psyche without enduring the abuse. Our society and industry vilify the victims and glorify the abusers for their accomplishments. The onus is on the abused, with an expectation to accept and adapt to be employable. No accountability on the transgressor who sails on unscathed, unrepentant, remorseless. These memories and more have weighed on my soul like bricks for nearly half of my life. I wish I had said something sooner. I wish I had the composure and courage all those years ago, but I muted myself in shame and conditioned silence. With tears welling, I feel an overwhelming sense of responsibility to Ray and others for remaining private about my experience with Joss and the suffering it has caused me. It is abundantly evident that Joss has persisted in his harmful actions, continuing to create wreckage in his wake. My hope now, by finally coming forward about these experiences, is to create space for the healing of others who I know have experienced similar serialized abuses of power. Recently, I participated in Warner Media's Justice League investigation because I believe Ray to be a person of integrity who is telling the truth. His firing as Cyborg in The Flash was the last straw for me. Although I'm not shocked, I'm deeply pained by it. It troubles and saddens me that in 2021, professionals still have to choose between whistleblowing in the workplace and job security. It has taken me so long to muster the courage to make this statement public. The gravity of it is not lost on me. As a single mother whose family's livelihood is dependent on my craft, I'm scared. Despite my fear about its impact on my future, I can no longer remain silent. This is overdue and necessary. It is time. So Charisma is referring to Ray Fisher, who, again, I say allegations, he made statements saying that Joss Whedon was gross, abusive, unprofessional, and completely unacceptable on set of the Justice League. And that was in 2017. And Charisma Carpenter is talking about her experiences that ended in 2003, you know, and that's a 14-year gap, at least, from something that she experienced and then something Ray Fisher experienced. At the same time, in 2017, his wife, Kai Cole, released a statement talking about how he had committed multiple affairs throughout the course of their marriage over 15 years, and that while he was going on set, giving interviews, talking about being a feminist, he was gaslighting his own wife, saying, "I wouldn't have these affairs, I'm a feminist." And then revealing, yes, he was doing these things and acting this way and treating other people this way, despite the message that he was publicly putting forward.
Mm-hmm. And so it is when, because we had talked about this privately before we even started doing Just Jossing, about the essay that his wife, ex-wife now put out about his serial cheating. Mm-hmm. And the, I remember reading it, and you can still be a good person, but not a great partner. That, however, I think once you cross over into doing abuses and things like that, you're also not a great person. The same as you can, people aren't perfect. No one is ever going to embody like something to perfection. No one's ever going to be the perfect feminist. No one's ever going to be the perfect, I can't think of anything else right now, but That does not mean
why the perfect activist.
Yeah. There's always going to be gaps. But people need to be called out on that so they themselves can get better, because you don't know what you don't know. However, in a case like Joss Whedon, he's been getting called out on it. Also, when you're using your power in a way that he is to belittle people under you, that's not a, this is a gap in my knowledge thing. This is, I'm an asshole thing. Mm. Like that, there's a difference there.
And so there was this, I was reading a Vulture interview from 2014, and it was about feminism. And someone said, the interviewer said to him, how would you advise men in the world who are shy about saying they're into feminism? What do you think is the best way to support the cause? And Joss responded, well, they need money, they need volunteers, but action is the best way to say anything. A guy who goes around saying, I'm a feminist, usually has an agenda that is not feminist. A guy who behaves like one, who actually becomes involved in the movement, generally speaking, you can trust that. It doesn't just apply to the action that is activist. It applies to the way they treat women, they treat the woman they work with and they live with and they see on the street. And so this is what he's saying in 2014. And at the same time as he's saying this in 2014, the way that he's treating the woman he's working with, the way that he's treating the woman that he's living with is not appropriate.
Yeah. What he's saying is true. That is how you tell. So there's like, he's telling us he knows what it should be. He knows what he should be doing. He is actively not doing it. And it would even be something like, because people can change. So, I mean, if he was a terrible partner in his 20s, and as a 40-year-old, he's like, I made these mistakes. I'm a better partner now. I no longer do X, Y, Z. Like, that's a possible thing that's recognized. That's not what he's done. Like, people are outing him. Yeah. And the other thing that people struggle with is separating the artist from the art. Mm-hmm. I think when it comes to someone in Joss Whedon's role, it's a little bit easy. He's not the only one in charge of those projects. So it's easier for me to look at Buffy, to look at Angel, who do have really great messages and people and other writers involved, and be like, yes, this is still something I don't find problematic in supporting.
Well, so Sarah Michelle Gellar mm-hmm. posted in response today, and she said that she will always be proud to be connected to the name Buffy Summers, but she doesn't want to remain connected to the name Joss Whedon.
Yes. That's actually, so I had logged into my Instagram to post, I got my COVID vaccine today, the first one, and I was going to share the picture, as everyone does, because otherwise you didn't really get the vaccine. And I completely forgot I was going to do that because I see this post from Sarah Michelle Gellar saying that. And I'm like, oh God, what has happened? So I just put in Joss Whedon's name and I saw, and I screenshotted everything and just sent it over to you, Jasmine. It's just like, well, our filming plan has changed drastically today.
Yeah.
And also like, I'm also someone who deals with things through humor and laughter and dark humor. So I'm sorry if that makes everyone else uncomfortable.
This is Sabrina and my hot take on the situation less than 2 hours after, you know, it broke. And so if we say something that ends up with our foot in our mouths, like, please forgive us, call us out on it, but please forgive us for, you know, making a mistake in a hot take, which is one of the reasons I hate hot takes. But again, I do feel like there are a lot of people involved in all aspects of the Whedonverse, and we call it the Whedonverse, but like, you know, with Buffy and Angel and Firefly, and then later Justice League and Avengers and, you know, Dollhouse. Yeah, you know, there were a lot of people, a lot of writers, a lot of actors involved. And someone can take a person's vision and really bring it to life, but at the same time, be aware that some of the individuals involved have toxic behaviors. And I know that in my own life, I have overstepped bounds with people. And usually they call me out on it. And I say, whoa, that was not my intention. I'm a dumbass. Like, I'm sorry. And then I try to actively make sure I don't do that again in the future. But here we have a white male in power who is then repeatedly crushing the spirits of the young woman and people of color around him.
And not just them. Like, it was pointed out, one of the things I looked at, James Marsters has been saying for years, like, that, and he always said it jokingly, but telling these experiences of Joss Whedon, like, cornering him. And he said this one time, like, Josh, like, pushed him up against a wall and told him, like, your character wasn't supposed to get over, like, I will kill you off in a second, da da da, and, like, just with all this intensity, which I think if he had not been a white man saying it, wouldn't have, like, people wouldn't have taken it as a joke, but he is, and it was. So I think he was just doing this to anyone he felt he had power over. And certainly women and people of color are the easiest ones to assert it over, but also so is this person who is brought on as, you know, supposed to be just a one episode guy and caught on. So he then hung it over his head for like half a decade.
Yeah. And again, and I mean, even the actors are saying, we made excuses. We made excuses. We rewrote it in our heads to make it okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, he didn't mean it. He wasn't being serious. He was under a lot of pressure. You know, we were trying to bring this show to life. You know, I could understand, you know, someone saying, oh, you know, Joss was upset that so-and-so got a tattoo because it means that they have to change the wardrobe or we have to write it into the character. I can see someone saying, okay, this is going to make it really difficult because now your character is pregnant. We're going to have to reshoot things or we're going to have to work around things. Like, I can understand receiving that news and being like, well, that's stressful. We have to rework things. Mm-hmm. But it's not, are you gonna keep it? You're ruining the show. Like, that's cruel. I don't know. And there's part of me that just keeps wanting to defend him, be like, maybe it wasn't that bad because I love Buffy and Angel so much, and I don't want to face the idea that this person that I do have an artistic an admiration for is, you know, a flawed human who is abusing their power to revel in their flaws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, it's so much harder when it happens to your fandom, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's so much harder. That being said, like, when I saw that, I was not surprised. I mean, we had warning with his ex-wife, and I do remember like the thing about the Justice League, but I didn't know who Ray Fisher was. I didn't know exactly what it was. And to be honest, when it came out, I was definitely dealing with putting together an organization to combat a certain the political climate in this country. So it was a back burner thing for me. So that is very much so. But I saw the sign, I ignored that one. So when I saw this, I was just like, it's clearly like, yep, this was coming. I completely believe everyone who has come forward, you know, believe all victims. They don't have anything to gain from this. Charisma Carpenter is very correct in saying, like, her career will probably suffer for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like Sarah Michelle Gellar is the one, her, David Boreanaz could as well. Like those are the two that could say something and not have it necessarily negatively affect their career, specifically David Boreanaz. But we've, in the past few hours, you know, Michelle, the woman who plays Dawn, yeah, has come out and said, you know, we all saw what happened behind the scenes. Tara's, the actress who plays Tara, Ember, yeah, has also said, like, that that's completely correct as well. You know, and Sarah Michelle, like, Gellar's thing, immediately, she immediately released that statement after Charisma Carpenter did. And I think it's great that everyone is reacting in solidarity. And they're backing her up. And I love it that the Scoobies are sticking together.
I know. And I do want to say that, you know, you can love having been part of a production. You can love having your castmates and teammates and crew and still acknowledge that there were problematic issues that occurred coming from one or even multiple people involved in the production. And I really feel that, you know, the world is better for having Buffy and Angel and the Whedonverse in it. I think that it broke through a lot of barriers that needed breaking through at the time. But that doesn't just give him a free pass. We need to be able to call it out, and we need to be able to look at episodes and say, okay, what are we seeing here? What is the message that he's put forward? And then what is the reality behind the message?
And it makes a whole lot more sense now, how it kept saying, like, especially early Xander was Joss Whedon. Like, that was hit, like, we've talked about how Xander, especially young Xander, is problematic, which is funny because the only other that we're aware of really problematic person from Buffy happens to be Nicholas Brennan. Like, he's so basically the character that was written sort of embodying who we now know as an abuser being Joss Whedon, the actor himself turned out to be an abuser. So it's, and my brain very quickly made that connection.
I wasn't aware of that about Nicholas Brennan. I knew that he suffered a lot of issues with substance abuse.
He beat the shit out of his girlfriend. Beat the shit out of her. He got arrested. Yeah. It's a really great, that's why they don't have him at Buffy stuff. He started being really unreliable, and his twin brother had to step in for him sometimes. And then that happened, and I don't think anyone really wanted to deal with him, which I wouldn't.
But wasn't Nicholas Brendan also sexually abused himself?
Yeah.
So this is showing a perpetuation of a cycle.
But not everyone who is abused grows up to be an abuser. That is still, like, that is not an excuse.
No, you're
an adult. Yeah, he's an adult. His drug abuse is also a sign of that. That he was abused.
But yeah, so this was kind of a depressing conversation to have, but I think you can't just shut your eyes to what's going on.
I was gonna say, we live in a gray world. Like, it's not all black and white. Some things certainly are, like, but people usually aren't all black and white, and certainly experiences aren't, like you were saying. Like, most times if you look back on them, like sections in your life, they're not perfect. There's something or someone that makes it a gray area, and that doesn't mean you have to toss everything out. It just means you have to recognize that. And you have to be able to talk about it.
And I'm a firm believer in know better, do better. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that, I hope that Joss Whedon will be held accountable and will start to do better. You know, I don't necessarily think we have to throw the entire man out, but I do think he needs to be held accountable. And if any of it starts to happen again, you know, he finds himself being rejected. And because the only way to change behaviors is to enforce consequences.
Mm-hmm. My suspicions and feelings, based on what I've seen with, oh, you know, every other guy who's been in this situation, especially since he is aware, like, of how he should be acting as a feminist, what his action should be doing. And he is has been choosing his entire life, it seems, not to do that, and has faced zero consequences for it. I think he'll probably weigh it as something that's either not worth his time to change. And I think that there are going to be people who still enable him. I think he has those connections. And just like you see with other people who have controversy around them, people will still work with them. Mm-hmm. I'm not as hopeful as you, I guess. In a perfect world, Jasmine is correct. I wish that's how it would work. Well, in a perfect world, we wouldn't be having this.
We would have lots of shock collars on people every time they exhibited a bad behavior, they'd get a little shock.
They pee themselves just a little bit and they would know not to do that again. Just a little.
But yeah. I try to be optimistic in this depressing world, and I try to hold out hope that people can change. And again, I know that I've screwed up so many times, but if people call me out on it, I try to adapt my behaviors. And this is something that I've mentioned to you before, and I've kind of touched upon it briefly in the podcast before, is that I am a queer woman, but I come from a family that is more conservative than most. My dad's from the Middle East, and he really tried to westernize, and my mom's from Scotland, and when she was growing up, being gay was literally illegal. And both of them did not respond well to finding out that their daughter was queer. And they've changed. Like, they changed, so much, and are so supportive now. And had I thrown out my entire relationship with my parents, I wouldn't have given them the opportunity to change. They wouldn't have had that opportunity. And they still stumble, and I still stumble, and we have to work things through. So I really hope that there is some level of accountability and forward progression as a society to allow people the journey, but also, you know, to not just stagnate, to take that journey.
Mm-hmm. And I think the big difference between what you're saying, your parents had a real emotional reason to want to change. Like, they didn't want to lose that, their daughter, they didn't want to lose that relationship, I'm assuming. In response to, I mean, Whedon has lost relationships. He tossed the one with his wife aside. And again, like, it's all going to heavily depend on what the consequences actually are. Because we both know that there are people in the fandom who will not care. They will not care. Because their fandoms can be a little cultish. But also, I think if you happen to be like that, you should also really take and realize that he is hurting characters and people that you treasure and love. Like, he was hurting Cordelia. That's what it is. The reason why her character had such a weird and crappy thing happen, like, Charisma Carpenter, rather, I went to Comic-Con in New York City for the 20th anniversary, and she talked about how very upset she was, and she pitched a bunch of stuff to Joss Whedon and the other writers about how her character could go. And that's one of the things that I really don't like about Angel. Like, before she ever said that, like, I hated what happened with Cordelia's character. It made no sense to me. Maybe it'll make more sense rewatching it, because I only bothered to watch... It's the only... that storyline is the reason I only bothered to watch two of the seasons of Angel once, instead of multiple times, like, the last season and the first season specifically. But... you know, if you're someone who's struggling, being like, well, I really love Joss Whedon, like, I'm just going to keep supporting him, remember who he's hurting. Like, you love the character of Cordelia, think about that.
Do you have anything more to say on this?
Probably, but, like... I'm kind of afraid to look at my phone to see, like, what else has come out in, like, the short span of time that we've been doing this. Like, I don't do a lot of editing, if any, these days to our podcast. So, I mean, however long this is running is however long. And I feel like since this broke today, there's a decent chance that there's going to be something else horrific, or maybe something wonderful, you know, maybe more cast members will come together. And that's what I'm really hoping for.
And so we can come forward with another minisode updates as this happens, as this continues to unfold. But I'm sorry that this is not a good Just Jocelyn episode, but thank you for seriously speaking with me.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes you need that. We will see you all next week back in the Hellmouth, and we will continue on with our regular scheduled Buffy and Angel with some sprinkling of serious news throughout.
Okay, thank you.